From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 26th day of July 2016. I'm Todd Gleason out of the office this afternoon. So no update of the commodity market trade in Chicago. However, Daryl Good, agricultural economist from the U of I, will be here to take up the price of commodities and what producers and farmers might do as they look at very low prices for corn and soybeans. We'll hear that interview very shortly with Daryl Good. Dan O'Brien from K-State University, our regular Tuesday afternoon agricultural economist, to take a look at the energy markets. We'll swap things out just a bit, and he'll take up the changes in the commodity mix across the United States in terms of acreage since 2001, and also the fall of commodity prices from 2012 to today, and what that might really mean as we go forward. We'll also hear from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service state statistician an update of crop progress across the U.S. on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Our term of the day is margin. The initial margin requirement is the amount of money required to be collateralized in order to take a position in the marketplace. Thereafter, the amount required to be kept in collateral until the position is closed is the maintenance requirement. The maintenance requirement is the minimum amount to be collateralized in order to keep an open position. Now, it's generally lower than the initial requirement. This allows the price to move against the margin without forcing a margin call immediately after the initial transaction. Margin call, when the margin posted in the margin account is below the minimum margin requirement, the broker or exchange issues a margin call. The investors now either have to increase the margin, the amount of money they have deposited, or close out their position. They can do this by selling the securities, options, or futures if they are long and buying them back if they are short. But if they do none of these, then the broker can sell their securities to meet the margin call. If a margin call occurs unexpectedly, it can cause a domino effect of selling, which will lead to other margin calls, and so forth, effectively crashing an asset class or a group of asset classes. This situation most frequently happens as a result of an adverse change to the market value of the leveraged asset or contract. It could also happen when the margin requirement is raised, either due to increased volatility or due to legislation. In extreme cases, certain securities may cease to qualify for margin trading. In such case, the brokerage will require the trader to either fully fund their position or to liquidate it. And that is the definition of margin.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let me take a moment now to thank you for listening to our ag programming. Thank you. I mean it. Really, thank you for listening to the programming. And just as a reminder, here's what you hear each and every business day. We start at 8:55 a.m. with the opening market report, including Aaron Curtis, Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, Ellen Dearden, and Bill Mayer. And then an update at 10:58 a.m. with five other voices, Joe Vaklovic, Greg Ginder, Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Steve Georgie, followed up at 12:58 each and every business day with Sue Martin, and then, of course, the closing market report, including our analysts Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, and Mike Zuzalem. And we wrap up each week by recording Commodity Week on Thursday evening. You can hear it at willag.org that night or on Friday afternoon at 2:36. Oh, and don't forget that we also have a whole series of regularly scheduled analysts during the closing market report for weather. Those include meteorologist on Monday, Mark Russo, Tuesday, Don Day, Wednesday, Drew Lerner, Thursday, Mike Tenora, and on Friday afternoon, both Jim Angel and Eric Snodgrass. WillAg.org. We think it's one of the most comprehensive places that you can find information about markets and weather and agricultural news. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much for listening.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Daryl Good, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Thanks for being with us, Daryl.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Farmers have been distraught and worried both about the low prices and the fact that they believe they missed the highest prices maybe of the season, given what the size of the crop is now. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about supply and demand in particular for corn might be at this point.
Yeah, I think, the operative word on corn is big, we think. We've got the acres confirmed in the June report. Certainly the weekly crop conditions report, along with the weather pattern that we've had in July, all point to above trend yield at this point. So I'm thinking we're looking at a corn crop probably close to 15 billion bushels this year, and even with some increase in consumption in kind of across the board feed market, export, ethanol, that's not going to prevent a buildup in stocks, probably approaching 2.5 billion bushels by the end of the 16-17 marketing year, and that points to continued low corn prices for another year. Certainly in the low $3 range as an average, probably for the 2016-17 marketing year, somewhere around $3.35, $3.40 would not be a surprising average price. Central Illinois bids are below that now at this point, and probably will remain under pressure right into the harvest season.
We know that price times bushels is actually what we need to get to, so there will be a lot of bushels. Farmers often really only think of the price because that's what they see, but they've got to consider more carefully total amount of income that they'll be provided out of this. Do you have any advice for them on this front?
Well, you're right. I mean, a lot of farmers are going to have a lot more bushels per acre than they've had in recent years. It's always unfortunate that the production is not equally distributed across all producers, so there will be some with smaller crops. But in general, with the high yields, it says that we're not going to be able to store all of the crop probably in permanent storage. Certainly on-farm capacity is not going to be large enough to store as much as a lot of farmers want to store. So there's going to have to be some sales, I think, between now and harvest time or through the harvest period. And so those extra bushels that we have, getting those sold probably in the next few weeks is probably a good idea, because I think we will see some continued pressure on the futures and the basis probably into the harvest period. So if you're looking at an extra 20 or 30 bushels per acre that you normally don't have, probably no need to go ahead and get that priced and out of the way. But I think storing the crop is probably going to be the decision of choice and would be the one I would choose at this point. The dilemma is going to be that it may require a fairly long storage period to see a price recovery. I don't think it will be large or quick, but as we move into 2017 and another growing season, we will see, I think, some rebound in corn prices, and that's what we would be storing for at this point.
On farm storage is an easy decision in that case. It's the commercial storage that becomes much tougher. How do you calculate it, and how long do you hold on to a crop in commercial storage?
Yeah, that's a good question, because out-of-pocket costs for commercial storage are not low. If you're going to spend probably to hold corn to next spring, you're going to spend 30 cents a bushel in many cases. And right now, the carry in the market is about that. If you look at harvest time bids plus a typical spring basis, there's about a 30 cent carry in the market. So commercial storage looks to be a break-even operation at this point, other than holding for just higher futures prices. So that's probably still have an opportunity to pay off on that, but it'll take obviously a much higher price recovery to recover on-farm, off-farm storage costs than is the case for on-farm.
Soybeans, I don't think, are that much of a different story today, although they may still be. The price has eroded substantially. However, this price remains, at this point at least, still above the insurance price set back in February.
Yes, it does, and I think they're probably, if you're forced to make some sales, probably soybeans would be the crop to sell at this point. We've seen a substantial reduction in price, but that followed a pretty substantial rally that put prices back up to the $11 mark or more. And so we have come down, but I think current new crop bids are probably higher than what we will average for the coming year. There's really no carry in the market. We've got an inverted futures market, so there doesn't seem to be a real potential payout to storage on soybeans. So I think that would be probably the way to go in terms of which crop to store, which to sell. Probably want to lean towards storing corn, selling soybeans at this point.
Earlier in the season, you had mentioned more than once that producers looking forward to soybean crops in 2017 might actually consider some pre-season sales. Are you still of the same mind today?
Not so much now. I mean, two things have happened. One, we have this inverted market so that prices for the 2017 crop never really got to the high levels that we might have anticipated. And now that the whole price structure has come back down, those prices don't look nearly as attractive. So I would take that off the table at this point.
Thank you so much for taking the time, and we look forward to having many more conversations with you.
Thank you, Todd.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the Farming World. Tomorrow, I'll be in Peoria, Illinois, at the Riverfront Museum, where at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, just after the programming here, the 4-H Club that has been working for the past month will talk with the International Space Station. That's right, and you can be there as well. If you'd like to see them, make contact. The 4-H'ers that have been working over the last month in the Peoria area with the ham radio operators to make contact with an astronaut on the International Space Station, you're welcome to come out to the Peoria Riverfront Museum in the main theater right at 3 o'clock. That program will begin just beforehand, so make sure you make your trip out to Peoria. And say hi to me, too, if you get the opportunity. I'll be there, probably just off to the side of the stage somewhere, but we'll bring you our programming, the Closing Market Report, to you on Wednesday afternoon from the Riverfront Museum in Peoria.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. The United States Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service says that as of the 25th day of July, Sunday, the 18 reporting states show that 79% of the corn crop has silked for this year. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 70%. 13% of the crop has entered the dough stage. 13% is also the rolling five-year average. This week, the condition of the crop is the same as it was last week, 57% good, 19% excellent. Soybeans blooming now set at 76%. The rolling five-year average is 66%. 35% of the crop is setting pods. That's generally 26% on the rolling five-year average. The condition of the crop remains very good, 56% good, 15% excellent. Those numbers were 57 and 14 last week. So the soybean crop improved slightly from the previous week.
This is Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Upper Midwest Region. With the Iowa Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report, recent heat and humidity helped speed crop development, although frequent rains allowed Iowa farmers only 4 days suitable for fieldwork for the week ending July 24, 2016. Activities for the week included aerial fungicide application to corn and cutting hay when fields were dry enough. Topsoil moisture levels rated 10% short to very short, 81% adequate, and 9% surplus. 86% of the corn crop reached the silking stage. That's 8 days ahead of the 5-year average, with 11% of the corn crop reaching the dough stage. Corn condition rated 82% good to excellent. Soybeans blooming reached 83%, 6 days ahead of both last year and the average. 44% of the soybeans were setting pods, 6 days ahead of average. Soybean condition rated 81% good to excellent. Oats harvested for grain or seed reached 54%, 2 days ahead of last year. Oat crop condition rated 79% good to excellent. The second cutting of alfalfa hay reached 87%, more than 2 weeks ahead of last year. The third cutting of alfalfa reached 13% complete. That is the Iowa Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending July 24, 2016. I'm Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Region.
This is Tina Finetti, Agricultural Statistician. I am reporting on Illinois crop progress and condition for the week ending Sunday, July 24th. Although temperatures were above average, rain kept most crops in good condition. The high humidity and rain did hamper efforts to bale hay. Spraying for weeds, fungi, and insects were the major field activities across Illinois. The state average rainfall was slightly over 2 inches, an inch above normal for the week. Temperatures ranged from 3 to 4 degrees above normal, and topsoil moisture was rated 1% very short, 6% short, 83% adequate, and 10% surplus. Growing degree days, accumulated since May 1st, range from slightly above normal to nearly 5% above normal. 90% of corn acres have reached the silking stage in Illinois. That compares to 85% 1 year ago and 86% for the 5-year average. Corn in the dough stage reached 18%, compared to 23% for the 5-year average. The condition of the crop was rated 4% very poor to poor, 14% fair, and 82% good to excellent. For soybeans, 76% of the acres are now blooming, compared to 67% 1 year ago and 71% normally. Soybean setting pods reached 33%, compared to 27% last year and normally. The condition of the crop was rated 6% very poor to poor, 17% fair, and 77% good to excellent. In other crops, sorghum planting is now 91% complete, oats are 51% harvested, and the second cutting of alfalfa hay is 91% complete. This has been Tina Finetti, Agricultural Statistician for the Heartland Regional Field Office with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in St. Louis.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office with Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report. Hot and humid weather aided corn development during the week. There were 4.0 days suitable for field work, and there were reports of heavy rain and strong winds during the first half of the week across most of the state. Small grains and alfalfa hay were harvested when weather permitted. Topsoil moisture supplies are rated 0% very short, 1% short, 75% adequate, and 24% surplus. Minnesota's corn acreage jumped 35 percentage points to 86% silking. That's 8 days ahead of the 5-year average and 5 days ahead of last year. Across the southern two-thirds of Minnesota, some corn acreage was entering the dough stage. Corn condition rated 84% good to excellent. That's up 2 percentage points from the previous week. with 90% of the soybean crop blooming or beyond, 39% of the soybean crop was setting pods. That's 5 days ahead of average and 1 day ahead of last year. Soybean condition rated 78% good to excellent. 86% of the spring wheat acreage was turning color. That's 15 days ahead of average and 1 day ahead of last year. There were a few reports of spring wheat harvested, and the condition rated 69% good to excellent. With 92% of the old crop turning color, 10% was harvested for grain. That's 3 days behind average, but 1 day ahead of last year. Old condition rated 78% good to excellent. That's down 3 percentage points from the previous week. 90% of the barley crop was turning color, and 5% was harvested. Barley condition rated 62% good to excellent. 94% of the dryable bean crop was blooming, with 34% setting pods. Dryable bean condition rated 66% good to excellent. Sunflower condition rated 57% good to excellent. That's up 6 percentage points from last week. Potato condition rated 91% good to excellent. That's up 2 percentage points from the previous week. And sugar beet condition rated 85% good to excellent. For the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Janice Presbury with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending July 24, 2016. Scattered rain showers provided enough moisture to alleviate stress to crops in many areas. The statewide average temperature for the week was 78.8 degrees, 3.3 degrees above normal. Corn dough was 10% complete, compared to 4% last year and 7% 5-year average. Corn rated in good to excellent condition was 76% in the north, 81% in central, and 62% in the south. Farmers started detasseling seed corn. Many areas finished the week still in need of rainfall. Soybeans blooming were 70% complete, compared to 64% last year and 67% 5-year average. Soybean setting pods were 35% complete, compared to 31% last year and 28% 5-year average. Soybeans rated in good to excellent condition were 74% in the north, 79% in central, and 61% in the south. Winter wheat harvest reached completion. Farmers are reporting above average yields. There are opportunities to bale hay, and the rain is expected to help regrowth. Livestock were under stress the latter part of the week during the heat advisory period. Other activities this week included crop dusting, harvesting oats, mint, and vegetables, spraying fungicide on corn, mowing roadside, and attending fairs. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending July 24, 2016. This is Janice Presbury reporting.
Our thanks to the state statisticians from USDA NASS for their weekly updates of crop progress across the United States. When we return in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Dan O'Brien. He's with K-State Extension, and we'll take up one of his latest reports, not the energy markets, which normally we would discuss with him, but a broader perspective on supply in the United States of most commodities, in particular acreage for corn, soybeans, and wheat, how that's changed since 2000, and how the value of each of those crops in billions of dollars have changed, dropped really since 2012. More in 2 minutes.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Coffee Milkshake Day. It's also St. Anne Day, patron of brewmakers. On this day in agricultural history in 1775, Benjamin Franklin became Postmaster General of the United States. In 1799, Isaac Babbitt was born, an American inventor. He created an alloy made of tin, antimony, and copper widely used for friction-reducing bearings. In 1924, he founded a company that became Reed & Barton, the nation's oldest independent silversmiths. In 1866, Beatrix Potter was born, an English author of children's books. Her first and most famous story is The Tale of Peter Rabbit. In 1926, Joseph Engelberger was born. An American engineer, he, along with George Duvall, developed the first industrial robot in the United States. Engelberger is often called the father of robotics, and by 1962, his company, Unimation, installed industrial robots at General Motors. And in 2004, William Mitchell died, an American food scientist. He invented a tapioca substitute during World War II because tapioca was in limited supply. But he is even better known for creating a number of products during a 35-year career with General Foods, including Pop Rocks Candy, Cool Whip, Quick Set Jell-O, and Tang. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm out of the office today. However, we have a really good interview with Dan O'Brien, who's on the line now, to talk about one of his recent studies that takes a look at some stats on revenues of the major crops in the United States. He, of course, is with K-State Extension, an agricultural economist. Dan, why don't you summarize the tables that you've sent to me that look back through the year 2000 and give me an idea of where crop acreage has changed and what revenues have been like.
Well, the main crops that have increased in acreage are the ones that we'd suspect, Todd. You know, of course, corn and soybeans with ethanol growth on the one hand through 2006-07 through the time of strongest growth through 13-14 shows that the corn enterprise responded. You know, we planted more corn acres, an overall trend of plus about 1.1 million acres a year. Things have slowed down some in the latter few years, is that basically you could probably tie that back to the RFS going sideways and prices moderating. And of course, for soybeans, we've seen, in response to Chinese export demand and healthy prices, growth of about almost 600,000 acres a year from 2000 through 2016. And really, if anything, things even accelerating, especially in 2014, 15, and 16, you know, getting over 80 million acres planted. So you take those numbers, look at the production figures that came out of that July 12th report, and then start putting prices to the production numbers to come up with some expectation that, you know, absent any major crop threat or shortfall, et cetera, that could come in and affect the price and the revenue in the market, then you look at where crop revenue comes in for corn, soybeans, wheat, and other major crops. And it's, you know, it's a sobering picture, I think, is how I'd view it, Todd.
How far down from the top is it?
Well, the best years we had for corn, 2011, 2012, we were 74, 76 billion dollars in crop revenue for the corn enterprise in the United States. We're projecting about 49 billion this summer, so that's down 36%. For soybeans, the best years were 12 and 13, 44 billion dollars. And it looks like we're about 36, 37. Wheat is suffering catastrophically. Of course, over here in Kansas, that's big for us. It's big for you all over there in the soft red areas as well. We're projecting about $8.6 billion of revenue, and we hadn't seen anything below 10, basically ranging from 10 to 17, all the way from 2007 to 2014. So pretty challenging times. One thing that does stand out is the consistency from 2010 on of hay. Now we're projecting about $17 billion to hay production. Of course, a lot of that hay is grown on the farm. We're putting an economic value on it, and farmers, at least in Kansas, may never see the cash of that, but it saves them the cost of buying it. Still, 17 billion in value, and we've seen an uptrend, frankly, in revenue over the 2000 to through 2016 time frame. of about, well, just about $500 million a year, and that trend has continued basically even since 2010 at about $250 million.
That, of course, is Dan O'Brien. He's with K-State Extension, joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.